Welcome to The Dynamics Hot Dish, the podcast where Ashley Steiner, Allie Nelson, and Liz McLennan dish up the latest news and insights about dynamics in the Power Platform. Join us to explore business applications and low-code development with tips, tricks, and real-world experiences. So grab a seat at the table and let's dig in.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for coming back for another week of Dynamics Hot Dish with me, Allie, Ashley, and Liz. If you haven't already followed us or subscribed to our channels on social media, please go ahead and do so so you can stay ahead of all of our updates that we're sending out. You can find us on LinkedIn, Instagram, Spotify, and YouTube. All right, and this week we are going to continue our admin series. So we are now on our third episode in our admin series. So far you've heard us talk about what an admin is and where an admin should sit within an organization, whether it's in IT or the business. You'll have to listen to last week's episode to get our consensus on that one. And this week we're going to dive into some basic tips for troubleshooting. And the reason we thought that this tied in very closely to our admin series is because troubleshooting is a lot of what an admin does. So with that, we'll get into it. I know we have five basic tips, and then we'll elaborate on each of those and give a little bit more context. So the first tip that we have, just getting right into it, is don't panic, even if your user is panicking. I'm sure you guys have both encountered that. How has that come up in your worlds?
Ashley, do you want to go first?
No, you go ahead.
Well, I'm trying to think of, 13 years ago when I was an admin. I don't think I have any specific stories, but it's not uncommon for an end user to kind of overreact to something or just not understand how it's supposed to work. So if you get this like red alert email, like the system's down, my world's ending, it might not actually be that serious. So definitely like take a moment, breathe, figure out what's going on before you stress out that much yourself, because chances are it's probably not like a earth-ending incident that's happening, even though the person reporting it might make it sound like that.
Well, and not only that, like I have a lot of users who would send every email like as important with like that big red exclamation point. And I've had to do a lot of education of like, okay, here's what's important and here's what's not important. And because you see that and your initial reaction is to be like, okay, what's going on, right? Like that's just everyone's immediate reaction. And so then you tend to start ignoring that, and then you ignore actual really important big problems. That goes along with what you said, Liz, is that like even if they're kind of like freaking out and reaching out and thinking the world's ending, they might do things that make you think it is. And, you know, obviously going into our next step, we'll get into a little bit more about what you should do when you see that. But I will say I'm a panicker, which is funny as a CRM admin, because like I'll see one email and be like, oh my God, the world is ending. I'll be like that person that like is running around saying the world's ending. And it takes me like 3 minutes to be like, okay, no, like we're actually fine. Like, so I'm actually the panicker in a lot of situations. And then I have to talk myself down. So
I want to be clear that like you should take it seriously. You should listen. You should respond. So I'm not saying like ignore them, but yeah, you don't have to get to that red alert level unless it's that serious after you investigate it.
This might be skipping all of the steps that we've identified for this, but when you say don't ignore them, my favorite troubleshooting tip is wait a while to respond and see if they figure it out themselves. So
that's not just with being an admin, that's with just life. I can't tell you how many emails I get where like a few hours later, the person's like, just kidding, I figured it out myself. And it's like, yeah.
So that's a great tip, you know, especially if it's one of those people that are common, you know, people that are sending things in. So yeah, wait to see if they figure it out and then maybe give them the attention they need.
So don't panic and wait is our modified step one.
And but don't wait too long.
But don't wait too long. Yeah. Well, and the other
you'll
thing
know.
The other thing that came to mind as you guys were talking too, in addition to the red exclamation point, but what about the emails that you get sometimes that have like everybody and their mom and their dad and their cousin copied on the email? And all of a sudden you're like, getting emails from everybody of like, hey, you need to fix Jimmy Dean's issue ASAP. He's copied me on this. High alert. And it's like, what is happening? And actually, I don't necessarily panic, but I get like a very physical reaction. Like my heart sinks almost when I see certain things, or like when people put something in the subject line that's like says not working or broken, my heart sinks a little bit. And I'm like, okay, I just have to read this. We'll get through it, you know, see what it is.
Yeah, especially if there's like management or leadership. It's like when they start looping and it's like they, you feel like they're like tattling on you or something. Yeah, I've seen that happen. It's not a good feeling.
Right. All right. Well, let's see. For our second tip, we have ask the user for more details. This one, we have a lot of different suggestions that we could run through on it, but it truly is just trying to get as much information as possible. And to Liz's point, this is where the one that usually takes place, where if you start asking more questions, then the issue may magically resolve itself. So I think this is a really important step in the troubleshooting process. What are some of the common things that you guys typically ask users for when you're trying to pull more information out of them?
Yeah, so I think the biggest one is screenshots, but screenshots are not always helpful because they're like, oh, we got this error message, and it's like just this tiny little picture of the error message, and you don't see what page they're on. They don't tell you what they clicked on to get that error message. So like, I think it's really helpful to get the steps or have them record a video, or I like to actually just jump on a call with them. Like, hey, can we do a Teams meeting real quick? You show me the problem. Let's see if I can replicate it. And then, yeah, so I'll stop there before I continue. But yeah, I think that getting the steps to how they got to the issue is kind of the first one. Now, how you want to get those is up to you. Everyone's a little different.
I agree with you, Ashley. I would say, you know, if you're lucky enough to be in an in-person office, I used to always just walk over and be like, show me too. And you might need to like almost do some training with your end users on how to report it, like what all the information you need, and that you do need more context than just the tiny little bit of the screen. Or like, how do you download the error log and send that? And so like, sometimes it's an education process of, okay, like these are the five other things I'd really need from you. Especially if you can't get on a call and just see them walk through it. So I agree with you, Ashley.
Liz, I love that. Training users on how to like submit issues. I've never thought to do that. I've always kind of just done it one-on-one. Like, hey, here's what I need. But like actually having like an organized training, I think that's awesome. I'm literally writing that down.
Is like, yeah. I've also encountered end users that don't actually know how to take a screenshot. And like, I've seen people use their phone to take a picture of the screen, and that's not always the best resolution. And so it might seem really simple to us because we're in technology, but like getting to that level of basics of this is everything I need from you and this is how you do it, so that I can help fix it faster.
And truthfully, one thing that I've done kind of along the lines of training is make like a template, either it's an email or a templated Word document. So if someone emails you or sends you a Teams message or however they're getting into contact with you and it doesn't have enough information, you can just send them that template and say, you know, hey, I'm really sorry that you're having this issue. Can you please, and then include some more steps, like take a screenshot, take a video, here's some reproduction steps, here's an example of reproduction steps, I want to know what you clicked. You know, if it's hard to do these things, let me know and we'll jump on a Teams meeting so we can review it too. So I think that's worked well. I think some other information to get out of them too is how often it's happening and when it started happening too, because when you start asking those types of questions, what you might end up getting is, oh, well, I just had it happen once this morning. And, you know, you're kind of prompting them of like, okay, well, let's try it again. Is it happening again? Because let's be honest, a lot of the issues we get are user issues, meaning that they click the wrong button, they aren't sure where to go, or maybe something freakish was happening, you know, for an admin, a solution's publishing in the background that's causing performance issues or something like that, you know. So there could be something else going on too. And just like we all like to joke about IT, we'll come to you and say, well, did you restart your computer? Or did you unplug it and plug it back in? Which I will call Liz totally for unplugging her camera today. And it finally started working again. So that was amazing.
Hey, I did a restart first.
She called you out, Liz.
Yeah, I don't like that.
But legit, you know, and there is legitimacy to that, is like literally try again. And I think that's a lot of what you can just tell the users is just try it again and see if it works, because fluky things absolutely do happen.
I agree. Connectivity issues, like is your internet slow? It's, you know, browser based. What browser are you in? Do you have a gazillion things open? I know we all get to that point where we have so much running on our machine. When was the last time you restarted? And like, these are all things of like, did you try all of this first before and then try it again? And so often it does resolve it.
Yeah, and I hate to say the clearing cache issue. I feel like I say that to everyone. It's like, when was the last time you cleared your cache? But I found as an admin, I had to clear my cache in CRM probably multiple times out in the day because I was in and out of records moving things. So depending on how fast you're moving in and around the system in like a short period of time, it does, you know, eat up the cache, and then you get weird things just happening. So yeah, I think that that's a good question to ask. The other thing is, depending on the message or issue that they're having, you would potentially reach out to other people that are have like similar security roles or in a similar role, or if they know like, hey, you work with, you know, Jimmy Dean, as you said before, works with Susie Lou. Trying to come up with a name on the, you know, so they work together, right? And is she experiencing the same problem that you are? You know, maybe your cubicles are next to each other, things like that. So either asking the user who's reporting the issue, or even just reaching out to other people that, you know, do similar job functions, if they're having the issue as well before you, that'll help you kind of determine whether it's local to that person, like they're doing something wrong, or it's their machine perhaps, versus it's something that's impacting everyone.
See, I feel like I would always try to reproduce it myself before, but I wouldn't want to bug an end user unnecessarily, but with the caveat that you would need to have like a test user that you could go and with the same security role and like the same setup as the end user reporting the issue. You shouldn't reproduce, try to reproduce as an admin.
No, that's a great point, Liz. Agreed. So that's definitely, I would put that first, like reproduce it yourself. Always have a test account as an admin that you can go in, adjust the roles, the business unit, whatever you need to do. Because yeah, I've seen more often than once, I actually just did a rollout where every person that was part of the pilot or the testing was an admin in the system. And so then when they rolled it out, there were a bunch of security issues. And we were like, well, how did we not notice this? And it's because every single person was a system admin. And I'm like, okay, well, not every tester can be an admin going forward. Like, I'm an admin, they're an admin. Like, it just doesn't work.
That's one of my pet peeves.
Yeah, testing with the wrong security roles is not a good way to go.
It's not testing. It doesn't count. It's not.
An admin can do pretty much anything. So
it's like unit testing. Like, you're testing whether or not, like, the config, the build works. But yeah, you completely ignore security. And I feel like security is where I always see the most errors pop up for a deployment.
Yeah.
Along the lines of what you were saying too, Liz, if you want to be a really great end user for your admins, like now I'm speaking to the end users directly, if you can do all of these things before you reach out to your admin, that would be a huge win as well. And maybe that is part of the training of your end users, is retry it yourself. Make sure you don't have performance issues with any other programs, because that could tell you that you have a computer issue. And ask your teammates. So, you know, Liz mentioned reproducing it yourself as an admin, but if you're an end user and you're having an issue, send a quick note to one of your teammates and say, hey, I don't think this is working. Are you having the same issue? And just have someone else validate before you send in an issue to your admin person as well, because that'll help streamline the troubleshooting there too.
What's a good end user? I've never experienced one of those. Sorry, should I cut that joke out?
Actually, I was an end user. I'd like to think I was a good one, but
I never had you, Allie. You were never one of my users.
It's tough. I mean, truly, a lot of this is educating, to Liz's point earlier. It's like teaching people how to report issues, because they just don't know. I think a lot of end users think that as admins, we know everything that's going on at all times within the system. And like, if I send a screenshot, it may seem gibberish to me, but my admin is going to know exactly what that means. So I think it is just like a education piece. I'm trying to tell them that this is what we need to be able to do our job too. So after we've done all of this, I'm going to cover the next two kind of together because Liz mentioned one of these already, but this may seem obvious, but you want to review and digest all the information that your user provided to you. So it's really like looking through the reproduction steps, making sure you understand the issue before you try to troubleshoot it. Because a lot of the time, if you start diving in and trying to figure out what the issue is before you fully understand it, then chances are you're not going to be able to successfully reproduce the issue either. So the fourth tip that we have is try to reproduce the issue yourself. I know, Liz, you were talking about that one a little bit, but that always seems like a good way to go to be able to confirm that it is an issue.
With the correct security role. Like, you gotta have the same exact setup as the person reporting the issue. You cannot reproduce it as an admin, otherwise it won't. It's just like testing. It won't be a true verification of whether or not you can replicate the problem.
Or truthfully, if you try to reproduce it as a system admin and it works, and then you try to reproduce it as the user, then maybe that's just pointing right away to like security issue. Right? So you can kind of do some A/B testing there just to see if it is a security issue or not. Have you guys, so I know, Ashley, you said use a dedicated test user. The impersonate function in Level Up actually works now. I don't know if you guys have used it recently.
I was just going to ask, it's never worked for me. Does it actually work?
It does. So like Level Up, I think, got an update maybe a couple months ago now. We will probably dive into more details and Level Up in a future episode as well, but pin it, especially if you're an admin, because it's a browser add-on that you'll absolutely love. And it has this feature in it that allows you to quote unquote impersonate somebody. So you can actually select a user from a list and it will refresh your browser and have you acting as if you are that user. And it now has functionality too within it where you can hit reset. And it actually like clears out the person you're impersonating and puts you back to your own permissions. And that was a huge limitation before because it was always like a gamble of, hey, do I close my browser? Do I close my window? Am I still impersonating this person or not? So there's definitely been some enhancements that I love.
Hmm. I never knew that it actually worked, so I've never used it.
I would give it a try. It's excellent, especially if you're with someone who doesn't want to pay for additional licenses for like test users and things like that. The Level Up now works pretty well.
That's cool.
That's great.
What else? What about reproducing the issue? Do you guys have any other tips on how to reproduce an issue or things that you're looking for when you're reproducing an issue?
I don't know if this fits in here, but read the error message. Like, I've seen so many times where people send over an error message and I'm like, well, it tells you that it's doing that because like you didn't fill this in or you didn't, you know what I mean? Like simple things like that. Like that's a really easy example. But sometimes like there are things in the error message where it tells you what you did wrong to get here. So yeah, so either as the admin or even just as a good end user, Allie, like you used to be, just reading the error message sometimes tells you exactly. Or if it is a security permissions, when you download the log file, it tells you what security role is missing or security permission is missing. There's a lot of other nonsense in those logs, but it does tell you exactly like, oh, you're missing read for this activity, something here. So that's really helpful as well.
Yeah, I love it. And I guess a general tip too, to tie into what you were saying, was for those error messages, sometimes people have to scroll down on the error message to get the download log. So just to add in there of like, read the whole error message. If there's a button that says download log, click it, and then you can open that. And yeah, Ashley, I 100% agree. Don't be overwhelmed by it. There may be a bunch of junk in there, or the error message may look ugly, but it usually gives you some hints at what to look for. And kind of on a tangent too, come on, Microsoft, give us like good out of the box error messages that don't just say like business process error.
My favorite is like when when it's like, oh, this has experienced an error, please try again. And I'm like, okay, that's awesome. Thank you for your help.
There's a wide variety of error messages.
Or it gives you, like, an error code, and you, like, Google the error code, and it means nothing.
Yeah.
Those are fun, too. I think we're kind of getting into step five a little bit, Allie.
That's perfect, though. Step five is another gem. Step five is figure out the issue and tying
yep,
into
Yep, you're
all
done.
Of the... There you go. That's it. That's all you guys need. But just tying in everything that has been mentioned so far, too, of using Google to try to look up an error message or a error code, right? Take that, search it, see if you can find any matching results. What other steps do you guys go through to actually, like, determine what the issue is and where it came from?
Like, other than the internet? Phone a friend? If you research the internet...
I text Liz, yeah. That's what I do.
I'm like, first you research, you have the whole internet, which has a vast, just vast information, forums, other, you know, user groups, social, like Microsoft documentation. Like there's so many different places that you can go check. But yeah, if you're completely stumped, like talk to a peer internally or externally, like someone else that is an admin or works with the system and see if they've ever encountered something similar. Now, if it's something like custom to your deployment, maybe it's not very out of the box. They might not have a good idea. But if it's a pretty generic issue or error message, then maybe they will. I think, especially if you're a newer admin, because sometimes you don't know what's supposed to work and not work. Like you don't really know what's normal functionality or like a normal error message versus like, this might be a true bug and there's nothing you can do about it. So especially if you're new, I'd say like don't spend too much time looking online and kind of double check with someone first of like, is this normal or is this not normal? And proceed from there based on their advice.
I'm going to add 2.5 things and you'll notice and you'll see why it's a half. So one, you mentioned forums and that's my half. Is that actually ask questions in forums. Like I know a lot of people just browse them and be like, oh, has somebody else asked and see if there's an answer. Put a question in there because I'm going to bet that if you're experiencing that problem, somebody else is and they're doing the same thing you are. And they're also just too scared to put the question out there. And I guess this could also be a half is post it on Twitter and tag some people, put some hashtags on there because there's a ton of MVPs. There's a ton of just people that are constantly in the system. I mean, I'm browsing Twitter all the time. I put questions out there on Twitter, you know, and say, hey, has anyone experienced this before? Like, I feel like you could do this and now you can't or things like that. So I would say that rather than just consuming, also put your question out there because you're probably going to help someone else too.
Ashley, Twitter is now X.
Oh, no, it's still yeah. Twitter.com. Okay. And then, yeah, that's a conversation for another day.
I do have a follow-up for you on that, though. What are some hashtags that you'd recommend that people use on Twitter to get the attention of, like, an MVP or someone that can help?
Yeah, I would say the product. So whatever product you're using, whether it's CE, sales, customer service, putting that in there, putting things like hashtag help, hashtag ask a question, hashtag, you know what I mean? Things like that that are going to be helpful to get the or just tag somebody. Sometimes if you know like, hey, like I see, you know, like tagging Doug, for example, would be really helpful. They can help you get answers or tagging like a specific person. Like if you know that an MVP works in a specific area, you could say, hey, have you come across this? Can you help? I've never known an MVP to like not help answer a question. So yeah, I would say those one of those two things.
How do people
I don't
find
know if that was
more
helpful.
Information? Yeah, I mean, so how do people find more information about MVPs or what their areas of specialty are?
Yeah, so that is like, I think that that could be a whole conversation in and of itself, but there is an MVP website and we'll put it in the show notes where you can say find an MVP and you can find them based on name and then everyone has a profile. And it shares like their bio, their backgrounds, their activities, and you can kind of see what people are good at. I don't know if it has Liz on there like our product specialty. Like, do we put sales marketing? Does it have that on there?
I don't know for sure. I'd have to check.
I don't look at it all that often. Like, I set it up when I became an MVP and haven't really gone back. Maybe yeah, I should.
I would say LinkedIn, though. Like, every MVP I know puts up their own MVP on LinkedIn. And if you look at someone's LinkedIn profile, usually you can figure out pretty fast what their focus area is.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, even posting the question on LinkedIn, I think, is a good one as well. I know, so I say Twitter because it's just fast, easy communication. But I'm seeing more and more things even go to LinkedIn because it's a great way to start a conversation. So especially, Liz, like in your scenario, you brought up a new admin. What a great way to get some content out there. And like, really, because the more you post on LinkedIn, the more you're going to be like in people's feed on LinkedIn. So yeah, post questions out there, tag people, put, you know, hashtags in there. You can even follow conversations. So on LinkedIn, you can follow a hashtag and it'll, you can click on it and easily follow what people are talking about. I think, well, I'm not a huge social media user. I'm more of a consumer, but LinkedIn is probably the one I do use the most often. And I think that's the direction people are heading, especially with this whole Twitter mess, which we're not going to get into. I think a lot of things are moving more into like a LinkedIn, especially from like a professional standpoint. It's becoming a little bit more like what Twitter used to be.
And then just to, you know, ask one more question for you, you mentioned forums. What are some good forums that people can ask questions on?
So two come to mind right off the bat. I'm sure there's more out there. The Microsoft community site, which we will put a link to in the show notes. Microsoft has built this awesome community. It's on the Learn website where you can ask questions. You just have to create a login for it. It's pretty simple to do. And but the great thing about the Microsoft community is not only are people like us on there, right, where we're, you know, we're consumers, we're consultants, we use the system. Microsoft product people are also on the Microsoft community site. So sometimes depending on the question that you ask, like the person who built or coded that part of the system will respond to you. So you kind of do have access to a lot of different resources there. So that's the first one I would say is the Microsoft community. The second one is Doug. I had mentioned that earlier. Doug has their own forum where you can ask questions. I know Dynamic Communities used to have one, like CRMEG. Does that exist anymore? Do either of you
know? I'm not sure. Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know.
I don't know either. I feel like yeah, we should.
So we'll put it in the notes if it does exist. I was gonna say I use the Microsoft community probably like for 90% of the issues that I run into. It's a great community.
Well, I guess I don't post a lot of questions. I'm sure you need to go to the forum to post a question, but to consume, I don't normally like go to the forum and then search. Like I'm doing a Google search and then the forum answers are popping up. So it's just part of the search results.
First one. Like they're almost always the first. It'll have several topics. It's really nice how it's laid out. I agree, Liz. I don't pose a ton of questions, but finding your answers is pretty easy. Just with a Google search.
Along those same lines too, if you're searching, I guess Google, Bing, whatever. If you're searching online for the answer to something and you get those community posts, you may also find blogs, like independent blogs that people write. And a lot of times they have comment sections on them and they will respond to you. People who write those blogs really like engaging with the community. So if they have a similar article, but it doesn't quite answer your question, comment on it. They would love to write back with you and engage and help you solve your problem too.
So, or find them on LinkedIn and ping them there.
Yes.
I'm going to say one more thing, and then I'm going to do my last follow-up to what Liz said before, just to make sure I get it in there. So is the other thing about the community is everything has a date. So when people post, when they reply, because something that happened 2 years ago is probably not relevant today, but you could be experiencing a similar issue, even though there's newer technology. So it's also really helpful because you can say, okay, 2 years ago, people were having this issue. How is it different now, the technology, and then you can unravel it from there as well. You do have to use some critical thinking skills, or you could even reply and say, hey, it's 2 years later and I'm having this problem again.
Now the date point is so important because old stuff is just usually not as relevant with how fast the platform changes these days.
And I would add into that too, look at the product or the section that people are posting in. And this again could be a topic for another day, but Dynamics 365 or D365 refers to multiple different products. So don't rely on people just saying like, I'm having this issue in Dynamics 365, because it yep. may be a different platform. So just be very aware of where you're finding that information.
I see a lot of F and SMC stuff now when I search, if I just search D365. So that's a great point, Allie. Yeah, it's like, no, I want CE answers or CRM answers. Like, I don't care about this ERP business for my question. So yeah, it's great to differentiate.
All right, Ashley, what's your last point?
Okay, well, my last follow-up to Liz from like 20 minutes ago was Microsoft support.
And I was going to ask about that. So I'm glad we're ending with it.
Yeah, I was going to say, so we're all going to roll our eyes, right? Because we all have these horror stories from Microsoft support, and like, they're not always awesome. Where they are helpful is bugs, right? So getting the bugs on like the fix list, because if you notice a bug and you post it somewhere else, or you don't notify anyone, who knows when it's going to get fixed. So I will say, if you are experiencing an issue, you cannot figure out how to resolve it, Microsoft support's a great person to go to know if it's like a known bug or if to get it on the list to get fixed, things like that. So Microsoft support is not, oh man, I don't want to like totally trash them, because they're like you and me. I remember I was on a Microsoft support call walking them through, and you know, we're waiting for something to load, and they were like, oh, tell me a little about you. And I was like, oh, I've been in the space for 13 years. And they're like, oh, I started 6 months ago. Sounds like I could learn some stuff from you. And I was like, all right, we're good. Like, there's nothing you could tell me about this issue that I already don't know myself. But Microsoft support does have its like place, and the bugs, I would say, is the biggest one.
And I will say too that they tend to have more resources available to them as well, like within the product teams at Microsoft. So I've gotten that a few times too, where a service technician will just say, I'm not sure, let me get to talk to the product team. And the product team is where the magic happens, right? So that's where tools are getting improved, bugs are getting fixes and things. And then if they get other people engaged, then stuff tends to move very quickly too.
It's been a long time, at least over a year, since I've personally seen like a global outage where like it just goes down. But it has happened, and it could in the future, hopefully not. But they do post, I can't remember the website, maybe we can find it and post it to Ashley, but they do put out like a public announcement on like what regions are being impacted if there's any sort of like global or mass outage.
Going back to Twitter, there's also just like an outage Microsoft Twitter account that like tells you what's down, and it's across all Microsoft. So I'll include that as well. But yeah, it's really helpful because Teams has some sort of outage every day. But Dynamics very rarely has some sort of outage, like you said.
Yeah, it's been a really long time. So it doesn't feel as relevant to bring up.
Yeah. But don't jinx us.
Teams and Office, like that's a different, different story.
Yeah. Anything else you guys have to add on ways on how to fix the issue, figure out what the issue is?
Well, I have kind of a random question. Have either of you asked ChatGPT like a Dynamics or Power Platform issue question? I haven't, and I'm just curious if it's helpful or not.
I haven't. I've never even thought to do that.
I have, and it's mixed results. So, I say mixed results because keep in mind that the information that ChatGPT is pulling from still isn't current day. So it may be a little outdated. So if it's something kind of generic, it has worked for me. But if it's something like I am running into this very specific situation under these specific circumstances, it usually can't help. And it'll still give you answers, but I found that I'll have to say, this is not what I'm asking. I need you to focus specifically on this part. And then we'll try again and I'll see if it works. But so I've had totally mixed results. And like I said, it kind of depends on like if it's a generic, like known issue that's on the internet that someone wrote a lot of detail on versus like my very specific scenario, it might not be that helpful.
That makes sense.
We should do a follow-up to ChatGPT because I found other uses in the CRM world for it, like creating documentation or summarizing meeting notes or calling out highlights, things like that. But I've not asked it, Allie, and for the same reason, right? Is I guess I just assumed it probably wouldn't have the answer to like super specific things. But yeah, I might try it out next time something comes up.
Yeah, I think it's worth a try, and I think it's continuing to improve as well. So depending upon what the situation is, try it, but read the results and make sure it seems like it's relevant.
I wonder if Microsoft is considering including any of that in Copilot.
Well, yeah, I guess it depends on what part. And then if you're talking specifically about like troubleshooting steps, maybe of like replacing the help button in your CRM browser, but with like a chat or something.
We forgot the help button, you guys.
Oh my gosh, the help
button. Thanks for mentioning that, Ellie.
I like how it just casually comes out too. I'm like, the help. Oh my gosh.
There's a help button, guys, in CRM. You should click on it.
And I guess the other thing I'll add to that, because I know we're coming up on time, but obviously we had a lot to share on this one, and we hope it's been helpful for everybody. But that help button out of the box goes to Microsoft Learn documentation, and you can configure it to go to your custom page, wherever you're posting documentation, like on SharePoint.
We're definitely over time. Do you guys have any other thoughts, anything you want to share with the group?
I'm good. I think we covered a lot. Thanks for tuning in to Dynamics Hot Dish, your go-to podcast for all things Dynamics 365 and the Power Platform. If you found this episode helpful, be sure to subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to follow us on social media for even more insights and updates on the latest trends and best practices in business applications and low-code development. We'll be back soon with another delicious serving of Dynamics and Power Platform goodness. Until then, keep innovating and building great solutions.